They abandoned their belief in the supernatural. Now you are asking me to sabotage that achievement, to send them back into the dark ages of superstition and ignorance and fear? No!
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Trolling with Logic. It's the 14th of July, 2013. It's 6 p.m. in the UK, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Good evening, or afternoon, morning, wherever you are. I see we've got quite an international audience in the room tonight. Said we are, of course, regular weekly podcast on all kinds of good stuff: science, secularism, philosophy, skepticism, and all that kind of stuff. We will be taking calls today, as you can see on the screen. To call in, add the Skype contact. With Logic, send me a quick message with the gist of your question and then we'll try and add you into the call. Also, please remember, if you call in, we do record the show, so you're granting us permission to use your likeness for later uploading. And with that, quickly, my one and only co-host tonight, Marty, welcome.
Hi, everyone.
Okay, and just to very quickly recap, last week we had our annual charity show and we raised, what was in the end, €1,053 for Mental Health Ireland, and we've been in touch with them and they're very, very grateful. So all of you that were there last week that donated and watched, and to all the guests, a massive thank you from myself and Marty. I'm sure you'll convey your thanks as well for the good effort.
Oh yeah, thanks everyone.
Okay, and quickly, I think our guest, if you have your Vaughan live on, guest, please mute it because I can hear an echo at the moment. Yeah, and there I am echoing, telling you. And we're very quickly, the secretary and founder of the Scottish Secular Society, Gary Otten. Are you there, Gary? Yeah.
Yes, I am. Hi, Cal.
Yeah, hi there. Gary, very quick word. If you have your browser open, can you close the browser? Because there's an echo coming from somewhere. Or can you put headphones on, please?
We're right, getting hold on a second.
Yeah, and I think, is that it?
I hope that's...
Yeah, that's definitely sorted. So, welcome, Gary.
I apologise for that.
That's no problem at all. It wouldn't be a live broadcast without some technical screw-ups here and there. Gary, can you just give us a little brief introduction to what Secular Scotland is? And I'm still echoing somewhere. I don't know where. Yeah, I'm echoing very badly.
Yeah, it's difficult to know what to close. I'm getting quite a feedback.
Yeah, just close your browser completely and just focus on the Skype call. It'll be easier. Yes, right. That's fantastic. So, right, off to a great start already. Anyway, Gary.
Okay, Cal.
Yeah.
We're away.
Yes. Gary, very warm welcome to the show. Like I said, I've communicated with you a lot, and this is actually my first time speaking to you in person as such as it is. So.
Yes, I know.
Yeah,
I know. And you're up there in the Hebrides as well.
Yes,
which everybody thinks is so close that it's millions of miles away, of course. And I'm down in Glasgow. I don't know what the weather's like that up there in the Hebrides, but it's 32 degrees in here. It's hot. It's really hot.
Well,
Everybody thinks Glasgow's cold and wet. Not today.
Yeah, I'm looking out and it's 12 degrees, there's a gale blowing and it's drizzly as hell. So, yeah, we're living up. But anyway, let's get into the meat and bones of what we're here for. So you are if I have it right, you're the secretary and founder of the Scottish Secular Society. So can you give us a kind of brief background on how the society came into being?
Yeah, why not? I mean, Caroline Lynch is the chair. I'm hoping will come in. I don't know where she is. She should be here by now. But anyway, I'll talk a bit about how it all started because that's quite an interesting story. I started off, as you can see, I've got a really lovely Glasgow accent. I'm from Peckham. You know, if I'd lived in Surrey, maybe I would have moved to Edinburgh, but I'm white trash from Peckham, so I moved to Glasgow. And I illustrated for magazines, so I did illustrator and like agent in London, kind of sells them abroad. And when I came out to Scotland, there was, a pretty awful murder, homophobic murder in a park.
Yeah.
And in Glasgow, horrific, really quite horrific. And I did an article on the homophobia thing that was related related to it and somehow responsible for it. And I was very interested in the way the media was treating sexuality.
Yeah.
So I had a column in Gay Scotland, then become Scots Gay Magazine, and it was examining the treatment of sexuality in the Scottish media. And this went on for 10 years, and it was an interesting subject to be dealing with. I mean, I had subjects like a police officer arresting a man with a snake down his trousers. There was the female doll that was found with a penis, which caused outrage in Scotland. There was a woman who was warned to remove a display of male dolls that were too close together in her window, otherwise she would have been arrested. There was even a spray that was brought out to detect traces of sex. And therein lies the problem, I think, in Scotland, because underneath all of these kind of stories of morality, there had to be a spokesman from the Kirk, the Church of Scotland, or the Catholic Church underneath, yeah. From either Wallace and Connolly, the Bill Wallace, the Reverend Bill Wallace from the Kirk, or the Catholic Church, Father Tom Connolly, whom I think they're deceased now. They certainly don't see their moral pontification underneath the stories in the newspapers anymore. I was surprised how popular this article went. It was it was a journey for me because it started me to realise that there was something, there really was something going on underneath, because there were other pernicious campaigns like Smutwatch in the Daily Record, which is a Scottish tabloid, and Name and Shame, which of course went out in the News of the World, in the Scottish News of the World as well. And I realised that these moral campaigns were led by the church, sidestepping spirituality towards political ambition. And from this article, I began to realise that there was a lot going. It was an interesting year because it was 1995 I did that, to 2005. That was an interesting decade because it started with the Dunblane massacre, yeah, where Thomas Hamilton gunned down a classroom of children, and went through various other campaigns right up to the vile and notorious Keep the Clause campaign, Section 28, which was a Tory law, yeah, that was brought in to prevent gay people having appropriate sex education in schools. It prohibited the promotion of homosexuality in schools, which is ridiculous because you can't promote it. You either are or you aren't. But anyway, this ridiculous Tory law, the government, the Scottish Executive in its early stages, thought, well, this is an easy one to get rid of. But what they hadn't estimated was a £2 million campaign funded by a religious, I would say myself, a religious zealot, Brian Suter, who was determined that this law should stay. And he executed a horrific campaign. There were billboards across Scotland. He had the press in his pocket. They were supporting him in the most vile way. There were beatings. Keep the Clause was a playground catchphrase in Scotland. And there were even murders. It was a horrible atmosphere for gay people to live in Scotland in the year 2000. And I was doing the column right the way through that period, and I've actually brought the Scots Gay magazine here. I can't know if you can see that. I've not got a kind of thing to see. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Can you hear me? Sorry, it's so quiet there.
Yeah, no, it's just we're listening.
I don't know how much you can see there. There's me in dressed like, get the irony, this is dressed in camos, and okay, I'm branching a rifle, and it's the Scottish, yeah, Media Monitor. And that, as I say, went on for 10 years. And it was inspired by Terry Sanderson, who was who's now the president of the National Secular Society, and he did a similar column for many more years than I did in the Media Watch column in Gay Times, and did a very similar thing. And so I was pretty bitter about religion, because over that 10 years and much longer, I've seen the most nasty, vile things done in the name of religion. Now, when I finished that, I brought out my first book, which is, can we go to an ad break here, Cal? This is Sexual Fascism, which is, examining the treatment in the Scottish media. I don't know if you can see that.
Like I say, there's no video right now, so you'll just have to,
Okay. So it's, up to the video camera. Well, that's
Theatre of the Mind.
Right, okay. So, Sexual Fascism came out, and it had a foreword by Peter Tatchell, and I, but after that book came out, I then thought it would be, useful to challenge religion whatever way I could, but it wasn't easy to challenge. I'm presently banned on the Scotsman site in Scotland on Sunday. I'm not able to actually, comment. I'm just immediately banned. I think it's a lot to do with a lot of people reporting me. They just go in, these trolls go in and report me, and it just, it's impossible for me to make any comment on any story. I had some success with the Scottish Catholic Observer for a while. I was able to comment there, and two other guys, Stuart William and Jeff Galuzzi, also were commenting on the Scottish Catholic Observer page. We were posting crimes, the numerous crimes of the Catholic Church, but I was banned from there pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So what I did was, with these guys, help, I set up Not the Scottish Catholic Observer Facebook page, where we posted up the crimes. Nothing big, just the usual stuff, the history of stealing babies from thousands of newborn babies from their mothers in Spain, keeping women slaves in laundries in Ireland, castrating boys without their parental consent in institutions in the Netherlands, nothing much. But I wanted people to know the truth, and it wasn't getting out. There wasn't this discussion going on. It wasn't enough for me to do just this Not the Scottish Catholic Observer page. I don't think that was enough. I needed to do more. And so the next thing that came out was Secular Scotland, and that launched on the 12th of April.
Okay.
That was last year. So it's been going for well over a year now.
Yeah.
And it was great. I loved it. I mean, when I first went, check messages in the morning, there'd be say one message and things like that. And so it was a really exciting time, because it's just gone berserk. It has gone absolutely berserk. And, sorry, there's my phone going, so get rid of that. So anyway, I went to a Brights meeting in Glasgow, and that's when I met a guy there, pretty mouthy guy, arguing with everybody. Really clever guy, very Glaswegian accent. I'd just been to the Quakers and given a talk to the Quakers about Secular Scotland, and it was after then that I'd gone to this Brights, which is this group of scientists that meet up in Glasgow, and it was interesting meeting this guy, and I thought, this is amazing. This was Derek McLaren, and he's like a terrier, grabs hold of your leg and you can't let him go, and he causes no end of fights on Secular Scotland. But he's a clever guy, and he is someone that I feel really can take things forward. And he came on board with me with Secular Scotland with fresh new ideas. He wasn't like me that wanted to burn the churches down and then shave their heads and parade them through the streets. He wanted to engage with religionists. He wanted to bring them on board. And we carried on like that for a while, and then suddenly we called her the whore from Babylon. She was such an eloquent person, and we discovered that she actually lived on Skye. And we kind of, she chatted a lot on, very, very, very talented woman, chatted a lot with us on Secular Scotland, and eventually she came to live in Glasgow and we had meetings with her, and it came to a year, April the 12th. And that was the year when I really felt I needed to do something. I needed to step aside for new talent. Yeah. I'd done my bit. I'd jumped around and shown off, and I had a policy of absolutely no censorship whatsoever, except for spam, but apart from that, no censorship. And it was something that my editor John Hine kind of taught me for Scots Gay. He had that same attitude, a great free-thinking magazine, never censored people. And I understood that there were so many voices out there. We were kind of, you know, rough, swearing guys from schemes that wanted their say, and they weren't heard on BBC Scotland, which is so up its own arse. So Secular Scotland really did something for everybody. Yeah. Nobody was excluded, and it still isn't. Oh. And if you go on Secular Scotland Facebook, you'll see some of the religionists come on board. My God, some of you probably say, well, they really should be banned, because they're very, very disruptive and very open that they are here to provoke, and it's very difficult. Anyway, it came about that Caroline Lynch was elected, our very own Paul from Babylon was elected as the chair, and she's really taken it in a new direction. She's really, really gone places with Secular Scotland, and I'm delighted with what she's done, absolutely delighted, because... And Derek too, although he's a very different person than I am. I mean, a white heterosexual male, the church doesn't threaten you. It's women, it's children, it's gay people, it's lesbians. There's a whole group of people that have a reason to challenge the church.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people, but Derek, no. But Caroline's been good, and Derek's been good. They are looking to talk to the church.
Okay.
And I've shut up now. I've done enough talking. Haven't I?
Oh, that's a very thorough introduction to it. I suppose, like,
I'm so disappointed there's not a picture. I mean, I spent so long on makeup.
Well, I suppose the one question, I'm going to ask this kind of from, you know, the kind of lay outside perspective, and it's one I come across a lot, and it's kind of the people who just say, well, religion doesn't really bother me day to day. Why should I get active in a secular group? I mean, Scotland's pretty secular anyway. What's the point? Are we just, it's just making noise for no reason. I mean, one example is, like, we have school prayers, and I remember I got into a little debate at work once, and the guy just said, oh, it does no harm, leave it alone. Why would you want to get rid of it? It's nice, just leave it. I mean, what's your response to people who are like that?
Scotland is secular, hanging on by its fingernails. I really think secularism and the popularity of Secular Scotland, which is now the Scottish Secular Society, is here for a reason. It's here because we need to defend secularism, and there's a lot of countries like us. I mean, there's Egypt as well, which is fighting to defend secularism. You've got 32 education committees throughout Scotland, and you've got every one of them, when the council elections happen, the back doors open, and in walk three religious affiliates or clerics to take their seats without election on every education committee in Scotland. That's one for the Kirk, one for a Roman Catholic, and another one for whatever religionist or religious group has the most muscle in the area. And if you're unlucky enough to live on the Western Isles, which includes you, Cal, or the Shetlands, you have to have four. Now, they're not elected. This is not democracy. That is theocracy. And it's wrong. And we should be defending democracy. We shouldn't be allowing it to be whittled away. We must rise up. We must defend democracy. It is under threat from from religion and theocracy. And it's something we're doing our best. It's going to be near on impossible to, to achieve this, but we'll fight as hard as we can. And of course, I hope Caroline, I hope is coming on soon. So I hope she can perhaps talk to you a little bit about, our campaign with the, Ask Parents First campaign with regards to religious observance in schools. But I'll save that because, hopefully she'll come on a little bit later.
Yeah, I suppose, Mortimer, do you want to come in with any questions there?
No, not really, because I have, I'm just here in the background, being here, I guess. I know pretty much nothing about Scotland except you make great whiskey. So that's it.
Well, I say, Marty, like, you're kind of, so if you want to ask questions as being the complete outsider, maybe if there's anything that's just totally over the top.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah.
There was one question I noticed in the chat room, which was, is there a geographic distribution of religiosity in Scotland?
I think, well, I'll butt in there with, because in my location, there's a marked kind of, geographical divide, because, you know, anyone, go onto Google Maps right now and put in the Outer Hebrides, and you'll see it's this kind of long chain of islands, and at about the halfway point, there's a kind of divide between the Protestant North, which I'm in, and the Catholic South. So, I mean, there is that, but generally in Scotland, it isn't that really much, I don't think, anyway. Gary, do you notice any?
Yeah, you've got this divide. I mean, as you quite rightly pointed out, you've got the islands, the Hebridean islands, split in two with the Catholic side on the south, and the Protestant, the extreme Protestant, the wee Frees, as they're called, on the north. The ones that tie up the swings on a Sunday and protest at anything on a Sunday.
Well, have to say the swings aren't tied up anymore.
Oh, well, that's, I'm delighted to hear.
Yeah, but
they used to.
Yes.
They used to do that.
They used
to,
I'm just going to butt in, because they came up with a sort of, what their reason was for chaining up the swings on a Saturday night was in case drunk people were coming home and played on the swings and injured themselves. So, but they say, why are they doing that every night? Because there's drunks every night in Stornoway.
Well, that happens here in Glasgow as well. But it's but there is this divide with the Protestant and the Catholic, and it's been incredibly incendiary. And not only that, I think there's been too much. Too much to support it, and one of the big things that support it is our sectarian education system, where you have Catholic schools, and there is very likely, very soon, there is going to be an Islamic school, and quite rightly so. If Catholics can have schools, why can't other religions have schools? Yeah. But I don't believe in segregating children on the basis of their religion. That's a ridiculous way to feed division, and we only have to look at where that is so widespread in Northern Ireland to see how dangerous that is. If people are going to have to live together and get on together, we cannot have sectarian schools. And Glasgow is on the west, so it's very Catholic, and then you've got it's probably a lot more Protestant as you go to the east. But it's kind of mixed, and you've got sort of certain towns which are very Protestant here in Glasgow, but not as bad as Northern Ireland. They're not waving flags everywhere. It is a lot more integrated. But when you examine the schools, I mean, Catholics will trumpet their success. I mean, they won't tell you that of incidences where inspectors have gone round and have criticised the schools because they're not up to scratch. And very recently, and this was a big story in the Daily Record a few weeks ago, back in May, I managed to get into a school where they were busing children all across the Catholic diocese to St Andrew's Academy in Paisley to watch an awful, hideous, abstinence-only preacher called Pam Stenzel.
Oh, yes.
The sex lady, she likes to call herself. And I was shocked by what I saw. I was gobsmacked. I couldn't believe this woman. She would, it's actually hard to describe how she acts. She comes across as a typical American mom. So, you know, so lovely, you know, you want to make her your friend. And, but when she talks about sex, she gushes out all these horrible diseases and uses such, she's quite open about it. You know, sex will kill you. I mean, she says condoms will kill you. I couldn't believe I was hearing this. I was taking notes. When I turned round, behind me was the Catholic, Scottish Catholic education chap, Michael McGrath, and accompanied by our father and the head of the religious education group. And I said to him, that was an awful statement to make. He said, you must have misheard, Gary. You misheard. That's not what she said. I said, I know what she said. I heard it. You were wrong. You're misjudging us. You're just trying to find bad things about us. And do you know, I felt very intimidated. It wasn't just him. It wasn't just McGrath. It was the other two as well that colluded with this blatant lie that I was wrong, that I misheard. I felt, do you know, I know what a child feels like when they have to report abuse in these institutions. It was disgraceful. I did my homework. I checked up, and there were other similar statements, because Stencil actually just the same show, and she'd already been in the States. In fact, she'd been flown over. I see our Kaz is coming on shortly, which is great. She's going to rescue me. And so I've done half an hour, more than enough. Where was I now? I was doing back to Stenzel. I've tried to put out the press release, and basically, here's Kaz. I put out a press release, and then that's when it just went absolutely live. And apparently one of the children in that show had to have extensive counselling afterwards. She was putting a gun to her head. That was the kind of stuff she was telling would happen if you had sex outside of marriage.
Okay, I think we can belated welcome to Caroline. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi there.
Sorry, I got caught up in the traffic in town, so...
That's no problem.
I am here now.
That's great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, where were we there? We've lost track now.
We've not got pictures now, have we? Or
no, well, we're just broadcasting the audio because it's just bandwidth issues we've been having lately. So we're trying to get us, you know, good quality broadcast for the people listening in live.
For Kaz's benefit, I've explained about the history, how she came on board, and I don't know if she's been listening. And explained about the Pam Stencil scandal, but I haven't talked about anything about the Ask Parents First campaign. So there's a good one for her.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just to let everyone, we've got a caller waiting. We've got a caller waiting. So we'll let Caroline talk, and then after that, we'll go to the caller.
Okie dokie. Well, I'll tell you a bit about the Ask Parents First campaign. We've been chatting, obviously, on the group for a long time with a lot of parents, and a recurrent theme that's come up over and over again amongst the parents is that there's a feeling that children are being pressured into religious observance, and the parents are not being told about what's being done and not being asked if it's okay. And so the first thing that they're finding out about this is when the kids start talking about God and Jesus, and in the case of my son, having nightmares about it. So we've been talking about this amongst ourselves, and one of our parents, Mark Gordon, came to us and said, look, I want to do something about this. It's a big problem. I'm thinking about doing a petition. Would you be interested in working with me on it? And so he'd already got this petition sketched out, and we spent about 4 or 5 weeks working on it and really getting it up to par, getting all the information in there. And then we released it. And the basis of the petition is not to abolish religious observance, but to change the default position so that kids are automatically opted out of it and they have to positively choose to be a part of religious observance instead of having it just hoisted on them by default. And we feel that that's a much more positive thing, both for the people who actually elect to have their children in religious observance, because they know that everybody who's in there shares their views and their beliefs and actually wants to be there. And it's a more positive one move for one of those of us who don't want our kids to be involved in religious observance, because this is not going to be going on behind our back, and it's not going to be straining the relationship between the teachers and the parents, because we're wanting to know what's happened and there's no information out there. So we launched the petition, and it was live gathered signatures for 3 weeks, and we've had over 1,500 people sign it, which is incredibly positive. And I'm still getting approached by parents now who actually want to get involved in this, even though the petition itself is now closed. And the next stage is that we're taking it to the Scottish Parliament, and we're speaking to the Petitions Committee on the 3rd of September, where we'll be talking to them about why we think this is the right thing to do, both for people who have religion and for those who don't.
All right. I was just going to say, what's the feedback been from the politicians in general? Has it been positive or lukewarm, or has there been any?
We've not had a huge amount from politicians so far. The ones that have been involved, initially they didn't seem to think that there was much of an issue with this. I guess they haven't had people beating down their doors. But as the story started to come in and we were showing them the things that are being said and things were starting to appear in the papers and people were talking about this, that they very much seem to have changed their tune and realised that actually, yes, this is an issue. You know, parents are getting annoyed and upset about this. And not only that, but children are getting upset about this. That's just not right. I mean, kids go to school to learn, not to be indoctrinated or to have some faith foisted upon them. And while we have no problem with children being taught about faith and about religion, we don't think it's right that they should be assumed that they should take part in that religion, certainly not without asking the parents first. We've got a hugely diverse society. There's all sorts of people of all sorts of faiths and of no faith here. And to just push children into Christianity, that's really a breach of their rights to follow their own views.
Yeah. Just waiting to bring in the caller. Marty, do you have any quick points there? I think we've lost Marty. But anyway,
Marty's gone quiet.
Yeah, he's gone very quiet. Jay, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. Jay, are you there? Jay? Can you hear us?
I'm here.
All right, cool. Ask your question, please.
Yes. Yeah, my question about the abortion issue. Hi, guys, Ferris. I think so everyone is here about what happened in Texas, and there's some progressive happen in Ireland and some else, and some issue about the abortion. So my question for you, here in Scotland, what's your situation and position about the abortion issue? And the other question will be about Sharia law in Scotland. So we will go with the abortion first, guys.
Okay, I think Caroline, you can take that one first.
Okay. Generally speaking, we are quite liberal, and so while we have a very wide range of views on abortion itself and the logic and the ethics around abortion, we are generally agreed that women should have the right to choose whether or not they have an abortion. It's about control over their own bodies and their own lives. And the whole issue is so complex. It's about whether or not you can afford to bring up a child, whether or not that child will be healthy, whether you're able to support that child. It's an incredibly complex issue. And so, yes, we do think that women should have the right to choose whether or not they wish to have an abortion. And we would be quite stridently against limiting that right to choose to have an abortion. At the same time, we do recognise that there is, like I say, very complex ethics around this. And there are debates to be had about things like late-term abortions, about whether the abortion limit is in the right place. It's very complex, and it's a dialogue that we should very much be having as a society.
Gary?
Yeah, the UK is, at the moment, I mean, we're looking very closely at what's happening in Ireland, because it seems that with a great struggle, they have made the first steps towards liberalizing abortion in Ireland, and when you think of the kind of struggle they have with the Catholic Church and the Vatican, that is interfering quite openly in Ireland's democracy, it is really quite shocking. We have something like 11 women over 11 women a day who travel across the water from Ireland to the UK to have abortions. Now, you know, okay, I respect life too. And the best way to prevent abortions is to educate. And the first step is a proper, thorough sex education. Let's stop listening to the nonsense that comes over from America, which is well funded by twisted research. We now know without doubt that abstinence only doesn't work, and it was shocking to think that just before, and as I spoke earlier about Pam Stenzel lecturing Catholic children, was sent over from, she'd been speaking to the Northern Ireland Assembly before she came over here. And that's absolutely wrong. It doesn't work. Let's listen to our nearest neighbour, which is Holland, which starts explicit sex education at an early age, at a primary school age, and they have a teenage pregnancy rate 7 times lower than Scotland's. Let's start learning from that. Thank you.
One thing I think. I'm just going to quickly bring in Martimar, because we do have someone from another European country. Can you give us is this even an issue in Sweden, like abortion or sex education? And what kind of sex education is there?
I don't know. There have been changes done to the curriculum pretty recently. I don't think it's gotten worse. But I can tell you about what, for me, we started having sex education in the third grade.
What age is that?
Learning about, basically just learning about, here's where babies come from.
Yeah. We need to convert that into, what age is the third grade roughly in Sweden?
9.
Okay.
9, 10, some.
All right.
Yeah. And then it keeps coming back, and it becomes more and more detailed.
Yeah.
But we learn, the whole idea of abstinence only, it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, and I'm guessing there's no real teenage pregnancy problem in Sweden, is there?
Or
is
it not really?
And
it happens, of course. But,
yeah, it'll always happen.
It's not much of an issue.
Yeah, and just a quiz. And the abortion, is there any debate at all about that, or is it just accepted?
The issue is when should it be allowed, not if.
Okay.
It's Marty, isn't it?
Yeah, Marty.
Yeah.
Marty, yeah. I sense some changes in Sweden, and I wonder whether you too are being challenged by religion. I speak with a group of, unfortunately, it would have been nice to have him on, actually, a group that deal with sex workers out there, and I'm very interested in enormous changes in Sweden, very negative changes with the tightening up of the treatment of sex workers, of arresting and criminalizing people who seek sex for money. And this undermines, I think, the safety of sex workers, and I know religionists are behind this, and it disappoints me enormously to hear of the murder recently of a very eloquent sex worker, a very educated sex worker who was murdered quite recently by her husband. And I really do think this is the wrong direction, and I don't know enough about what's happening in Sweden to know how much help you get from the religious to turn things around to a much more socially conservative state of affairs than you've had before.
Yeah, I don't really know about that issue either.
All right, Jay, what was your second question again?
Sorry. Guys, the second question, it is, what is the Sharia law position in Scotland? Because in England, as I know before, there is like a plan to make Sharia courts, and totally that abuse human rights. I don't know even how UK think to make Sharia law, or Sharia court is available in any level. So what about you guys there? You are safe from Sharia law or you are not?
We don't have Sharia law in the UK at the moment, but there is a push from the politically correct lobby perhaps to consider having Sharia law, perhaps out of a point of view of respect of Muslims and Islamic views. However, I think there can only ever be one law of the land, because once you start confusing the issue with having different laws for different groups, then which laws take precedence, and what if you have mixed marriage laws? There's also some very uncomfortable concepts within Sharia, like a woman's testimony being worth half that of a man. A man can get freely divorced, whereas a woman has huge hurdles to jump first. And the fact that in Islam you can have multiple wives, whereas in UK law you can't. So under UK law, second and subsequent wives are not protected. And these are all very complex issues that need to be looked at. Personally, I would be stridently opposed to having any form of recognition of Sharia law. I think it's quite an old tribal system, and it's not compatible with our views of equality between women and men. I have a problem with Sharia for that reason.
Of course you are, because you are a human being, you should have a problem with Sharia law. Any human being respect conscious and human right should have some problem with Sharia law, because obviously if some people doesn't know that Sharia law in all levels and details abuse human rights from children. In Sharia law there are allowed children rape under Sharia marriage, and they are allowed a lot of awful things, beating wife, rape wife from her husband. It is awful things there in the detail of Sharia law. So I don't even think there is any country should allow that. Even Muslim countries, they should allow it.
I completely agree. I mean, Sharia is something that I've been educating myself about over a period of time, and the more I find out about it, the more disturbing I find it to be. It's just not compatible with our views of equality and human rights and personal liberty and freedom. And while I understand that there are a lot of Muslims out there who feel that Sharia law is the way to go and that they want it, there is nothing stopping them from following their Islamic way of life as long as they adhere to the laws of the country that they are in. So if they want to follow edicts from Islam on when they should eat and what they should wear, fine. I don't have an issue with that. But when it comes to justifying beating women, abusing children, forcing women to stay in bad marriages, taking their children away from them if they get divorced, that's a big problem, and that's not something that we can legitimize.
Thank you so much, Farolin.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciated this opinion.
Okay, well, it's nice to talk to you.
All right, any other questions, Jay?
Yeah, I just went back to some statement in the Ireland abortion. some people said it is a progressive, but I found this statement, it is when the life become dangerous, the woman life. Who will decide that? The religion yes. doctor? That's really confused me. If the religion doctors will decide that, that means we are back in the zero point, in the original point.
Yes. Yeah, you need to have some sort of professional who's assessing and deciding these things. Certainly a woman should be able to abort when her life in danger. But I would take it further than that, because having a child has a massive impact on your life. And it doesn't matter whether that child's healthy or disabled, you're still going to have that massive impact on your life. So I wouldn't restrict it to purely when woman's life's in danger. But yes, you need a certain professional dispassion there. And anyone who has sort of a vested personal, strong personal view, for example, a Catholic doctor, I don't know that they should be making those decisions.
I think in the case of the Indian woman, though, it was a question of the law. The law on abortion in Ireland was so strict. I think that had an impact. It was the doctor, I think, was just took a decision that he had to stand by the law. I have read recently that it's a little bit more complicated than that. I believe, and I may be wrong, that the woman had septicemia, that there were other issues involved, but it doesn't take away from the fact that the whole situation in Ireland is completely a mess.
Yes, I mean, they are making progress, thankfully, towards liberalising it, as you said earlier, Gary. And hopefully this is the first step of many to come. Nobody is going to say that a Catholic person should have an abortion, but I'm not sure why a Catholic person should say that a person who isn't Catholic cannot have an abortion. So it always seems very strange that their interest in the child stops at the point at which they're born, which is one of the problems that I have with it. But ultimately, it's got to be a choice of the woman who is going to bear the responsibility for any child that is born for the rest yes. of her life. It's got to be her choice.
Absolutely.
Yes, I agree with you. Totally, I agree with you.
Okay, anything else, Jay?
No, thank you, guys.
All right, thanks. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, Jay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, I suppose I'm going to ask one obvious question. What's the kind of pushback? I mean, I'm kind of aware of it myself, the pushback from the religious community in Scotland being towards you guys.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I think I know what you know what I'm hinting at.
I love I'm not aware of it. So
yeah. Me. Oh, yes. I think you'll enjoy this, Marty.
Yeah. We have our fans, shall we say. And I say that in a very tongue-in-cheek manner. There's a wide range of views within religion in Scotland. And we have some people who are curious about us, who are trying to work us out and don't quite get us. We have some people who are absolutely stridently opposed to anything and everything that we say just because we say it. And, they interact with us on a regular basis, and it's a source of interesting debate and occasional amusement when we have these discussions. We have some religious people who are also very secular and absolutely understand that what we're trying to do is not abolish religion. It's not about getting religion got rid of or shut up in purely in private so that we never actually have to look at it and we can treat it like our nation's dirty secret. They understand that it's purely about levelling the playing field and making sure that religion is no more privileged than non-religion. So there's a lot of different views out there, but there's so much hyperbole in the public arena about secularism and about the dire consequences of allowing secularism to flourish within the religious community that I think the general atmosphere is one of suspicion and distrust, which is a little sad.
Yeah, well, it's just I'm going to especially everyone knows like I'm in the Outer Hebrides, and you know secularism in these communities is a dirty word.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, yes, you see it. Yeah, like I said, you'll see in the local papers that it's almost like a swear word to a lot of people here.
Yes.
The fact is that the word is recognised. And I think that the credit for that has to be the recent same-sex marriage debate where we've seen the worst of religion. And that's brought secularism to the fore. It's you'll hear religionists who insist that the majority of people have spoken and they don't want same-sex marriage. It's not true. There was a consultation, and churches, Catholic churches, were postcards were handed around, and people had to sign these postcards, and they were sent off. Now, a lot of the Catholic churches are full, but not of Scottish people, of new immigrants, like Poles. So, you know, one has to question what they mean when they say the majority of people support same-sex marriage. The majority of people do support equality and do support same-sex marriage in every survey that's been, the independent survey that's been taken both here and abroad in Western countries anyway. Now, as regards to engaging with religious people, quite recently I went to meet a group in East Kilbride. And, you know, on the whole, I'm filled with hope. I think that we can engage with religious people and we can find things in common. I mean, there are going to be difficulties. I have to say, when I was there, I had to face the minister, tell the whole congregation, as he pointed to me, that my homosexuality was a conviction, merely a conviction and a lifestyle choice. But I think we can overcome that nonsense, and I think we can engage with religionists on a different level, as Caroline quite correctly says, to create a level playing field.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, at the moment, we're very much interested in talking to Muslims, particularly with it being Ramadan at the moment. We have an ongoing debate in the group at the moment about the veil and why people choose to wear the veil and whether or not it's oppressive. We're discussing the fast around Ramadan and whether or not that's a good and healthy thing for children to do. There's a very strong interest in Islam, and so we would very much like to talk to lots of Muslims and understand more about their views.
Okay, we do have a question from the chat room, and I think he's just wanting your opinions on these scenarios, and it's all related to the abortion question again. First scenario is, if a woman and a man don't want a child and have an abortion. I don't know. He's not giving much details there.
Yeah, I mean, that's their choice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always kind of brought and reduced down to abortion, and that's one of the things that saddens me. I personally am adopted, and what I would like to see for the faith community to do is, instead of standing there with their placards shouting about abortion, is to start protesting about all of the ridiculous hoops that people have to jump through in order to adopt in this country. There are an awful lot of families who would like to adopt but can't because or won't go through the process because it's so ridiculously bureaucratic. And I think it's also true that there are a lot of young people who find themselves pregnant who don't want to consider adoption because of all of the bad stigma around it, because of the difficulties in finding parents, because they're worried that their children will end up growing up in care. And I think that this is something that we could very much work together on to rework the adoption system. And that in itself might reduce the number of people who would choose an abortion. So there are positive ways to do it. And I don't think we always need to be concentrating on abortions. Abortions is very much the end product. And we need to be looking at the start, at sex education, to make sure that people are not getting pregnant when they don't want to. And at when they are pregnant, are there other ways that they could deal with the pregnancy apart from abortion, because abortion shouldn't be a routine thing, it should be a last resort.
Yep. And the next scenario, the guest says he wants all three scenarios together, but I think it's just better to break this down a bit. If a man does, I think it's all just, he's throwing scenarios. If a man does and a woman doesn't allow surrogacy, and if a woman wants to keep it but a man doesn't, he can remove all legal claim and responsibility of it. I'm sorry, I think it's a very muddled. If you're in the room, guest, can you break down that question a bit more? Because it's coming across very muddled. We're not too sure what the point is. So what other campaigns are you guys involved in at the moment?
Well, at the moment, we've just formalised ourselves into a society form, and we're launching ourselves as the Scottish Secular Society rather than purely Secular Scotland. And we're currently polling our members on what issues they would like us to tackle next. We're discussing whether or not we should run a campaign on female genital mutilation awareness, because that is happening to a lot of girls and young women in this country. And yet, despite the fact that it's been illegal for 12 years, not one person has been prosecuted for it. So we think that that very much needs to be raised and talked about and discussed, because the girls and women who go through this procedure, assuming they even survive it, because it does cause deaths, they suffer with pain and with complications for the rest of their lives. And that is a horrendous thing to happen, and more so that we seem to be ignoring it for the sake of a little peace and a little political correctness. So there is no political correctness to mutilating your children. Yeah, so no. That's something that we're discussing.
Yep. And also I would like to see less concentration on things like homeopathy in hospitals. I know hospitals in Glasgow, there's fantastic, glamorous, beautiful extensions in hospital wings like Gartnavel, with gardens and peaceful rooms, all wonderful and funded by the NHS, as indeed the NHS funds chaplains, which I have no problem with, but I think it's about time that was privatised, because at the end of the day, proven health comes first, and when the purse strings are tight, then I'm afraid things like that are the first that should go. And the other things that I would like to see, campaigns on in the future is broadcasting. BBC Scotland, both radio and television, doesn't portray religion fairly. It has spent far too much time on it. One of the worst examples was the so-called state visit of the Pope, where you saw the head of the BBC going out to the Vatican to assure them that he will get good coverage. You see head of Radio 4, I think it was Mark Dammitzer, who was assuring the Pope that he will be on Thought for the Day, which is a blatant piece of religious proselytizing which interrupts the morning news every morning, and wanted the Pope on that. Following that, he got his CBE. We see a disgraceful leaning towards the promotion of religion, and the secular voice just isn't there. There's nothing to contest it. There's no balance. And I think that that's something we should focus on as well.
Absolutely. And going back to the NHS as well, another issue that we're looking at is that at a point where austerity is very much the important influence within the health service, where there are cuts going on, where people are losing their jobs, why are we paying for chaplains in the NHS? I mean, these people work for some of the richest organisations in the country, and yet the NHS is paying out for them to do their job, and that seems a little wrong. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be there and that they serve no purpose. I'm sure that there are people who find them very comforting, but I take issue with the NHS paying for them.
Okay, there was another question. Please finish up.
Okay, and the final hot potato that we're very much discussing at the moment is the religious affiliates who are unelected and on the education boards. And we have 32 education boards in Scotland, and most of them have three religious affiliates, one who's a representative of the Church of Scotland, one who represents Catholicism, and the third representing whichever is the strongest religious force in the area. Over in the Western Isles, I believe it's four, and Shetland it's four. And there's no real oversight of what these people are doing. We don't know what their agenda is. We don't know how they're influencing decisions that are being made. But they are influencing what our kids are being taught. And given that Christianity is very much on the decline, it doesn't represent the majority of people in this country anymore. You break it down to the individual sects who are on these education boards, and they are very much in the minority. Why are they having this input into our children's educations, yeah. especially the fact that we have no control or oversight over this. They have these positions by law. Why is it not open to general representatives of public interest rather than people specifically within religion? That to me, again, seems like a very odd position to have in a modern 21st century country.
Okay, another question was from a guest in the chat room on the subject of female genital mutilation. What do they think of the circumcision of men for religious reasons?
Yeah, this is one that we have discussions about on a fairly regular basis. A philosophical viewpoint, I would say that it's wrong to do it for religious reasons, but it's not quite the same. It's not on the same level as female genital mutilation. It's done on very, very small babies, whereas with girls, it is done on girls typically of 7 to 12 years old, and the babies tend not to remember it. There are no long-lasting side effects for the vast majority of people, of men who are circumcised. I know that some people do have complications and that things do go wrong, but it's a very small number. Whereas with women, they all suffer pain. They all suffer side effects. There are complications across the board. And so it's a slightly different issue. So yes, while I would say from a philosophical viewpoint that yes, I have a problem with male circumcision when it's done for religious reasons, it's not quite the same level of priority for us.
Okay, Gary. Marty.
As far as I'm concerned, the issue here is consent. I mean, someone is lopping off a part of your body without your explicit consent. That's called assault.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, philosophically speaking, yes, I agree with that totally. I would prefer if it were delayed for, say, Jewish kids, until they are of an age to actually give informed consent and then done, say, around bar mitzvah time. And I know that one of the arguments against that is that it's much more traumatic for an older male to have it done than it is for a baby. But is that simply because we can't talk to the baby and find out how they feel about it, whereas we can talk to the older boy about it? And there have been progressive moves in male circumcision. It's done routinely on adults now in Africa in order to try and combat the spread of HIV, and it's done with, I believe it's a three-part sectional plastic clip, which is attached to the foreskin and causes the foreskin to wither, much the same as they do with an umbilical cord in a newborn, over a period of a week. And apparently there's very little pain, very little discomfort, and very little complications that occur with this. So to say that it's too traumatic for it to happen on teenagers, to me, that's an out-of-date argument. So yes, I mean, philosophically speaking, absolutely, I agree. It's an issue of consent, and a baby cannot give consent.
Marty, anything?
No.
All right. I was just going to check for the other question. There was one question that was asked a while ago. Has anyone in secular Scotland actually ever been met with any violent kind of retaliation? I don't think that's an issue at all.
No. I mean, I've had the odd person telling me that I'm going to burn in hell. Yes, they tell me this with love. I've had a couple of people offer to save my soul with sex, which I think is hilarious. But to my knowledge, no one has ever faced violence in secular Scotland because we're secularists. And I would hope that that's not the case, because we're not anti-religion. Yeah. We're, like I said, we're just trying to find the balance.
Supposedly one question, I think I know the obvious answer, but like, where do you face the biggest pushback? I think I know the answer to that myself in Scotland from secularism.
I'm
sitting right in it.
Yeah, I mean, the Free Church love us deeply. yeah, I can hear Gary laughing in the background. They are convinced that we have a personal campaign against them, and that we wish to see Christianity eradicated from the public sphere, which is complete bunkum. But that's due to a lot of the rhetoric that's going on in the public sphere, and it's going to take time and conversations to build that understanding and a level of trust so that they know that that's not what we're about. And I don't know if that is something that we will ever achieve, but it's certainly something we're trying to do.
Okay, I think we might have a caller coming up, so Marty, can you please cover for me while I try and sort out the caller?
I think that guy was on about scenarios for abortion. I think that guy was on about something like if if the man can somehow waive responsibility for a child that he doesn't want or something. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, I mean, that's an argument that I've heard before, that, you know, if a man doesn't want the child and says up front that he doesn't want the child, but the woman refuses to abort, should he then be forced to you know, be responsible for the child? But contraception is a joint responsibility of both people that are in the sexual relationship. So, you know, he's had the fun and, you know, it's too late after the deed to change your mind. Now, I understand.
I agree.
Yeah, I understand that there's a lot of men out there who are resentful at being forced to pay for a child that they didn't plan, they didn't want. But, you know, I mean, there are consequences and you don't get to duck out of the consequences that of your own actions. So that's just basic common sense.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. They're not wanting to call in after all. It was just a contact request came through. So okay. All that build up or nothing. Like I said, I was going to ask, well, we're going over all the campaigns. Like, Caroline, I suppose we'll go round in a circle back to Gary. Like, can you give us your perspective on the formation of Secular Scotland? Like, how it all came about for you?
Right.
Oh, no, sorry, to Caroline. Yeah, we want to hear Caroline's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I covered that.
All right.
Yeah, that's what
I
thought.
But I got to the point where Caroline was elected chair, so, yep, go for it, Kaz, tell them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll go back to my sort of early experiences, first of all.
Yeah.
I was living in Caerleon Loch Alsh, which is just across from Skye, just over the bridge. And, you know, I was an atheist and I was pretty much the only atheist in the village. But I wasn't overly strident about it, until my son started having nightmares at school because someone had been telling him about Jesus having nails hammered through his flesh. And that was a huge concern for me. You know, I don't think they should be saying things like this to a six-year-old child. And there was no information given. I was never asked my opinion on it. It was just taken for granted that this was okay. And so I started searching on the internet to basically see what the rules were about this. You know, is this okay? Other parents out there having the same experience? And that's how I came across Secular Scotland, which at the time was very young and very new. And there were an awful lot of people on there having the same kind of issues. And I thought, wow, I'm really not the only atheist in the village. There's actually quite a few of us out there. And we're all having these concerns. So I started chatting with Gary and Derek and the other people who were on the site. And gradually became more and more impassioned about this, thinking, you know, why are they assuming that this is okay? This is not okay. You know, this is psychological terrorism of small children. And so I became more and more passionate about it, more and more angry about it. And yes, Gary asked me if I would like to, first of all, become an admin on the site. And so I said yes. And we continued to grow it very much organically with more and more people, you know, hearing on the grapevine about us. Or finding us because, like me, they were having issues which they wanted to explore and understand. Sorry, Gary?
I was going to say, and it's so addictive. It's so addictive. Yeah. I mean, what happened then? Was it just exploded? Because we had the talent of the century. I mean, how the Americans cope with Robert Canning, I don't know, because he is irony personified. Every statement he makes is wonderful. You've got to double read it. But it's hilarious, absolutely hilarious. And he kind of, if you like, reads the news. So what happens in the morning, I usually put up the news from the Scottish news, Scottish religious news, you know, what's going on, the crimes, the fights, what have you. And then Robert comes on to put up the national news, the religious news, and you get those posted. So if you're a member of Secular Scotland and on the Facebook group, it's the best one, because that's where all the fights break out. And boy, do we have some personalities there. We've got strident atheists like the lovely Mark Gordon, who's the parent, the Inverclyde parent behind the Ask Parents First campaign. And you've got David Andrew Robertson. Now, you probably won't have heard of him, but he's him and Richard Lucas. Richard Lucas, by the way, has almost daily letters in the Scotsman, a privilege which is quite, again, when I'm talking about media and privileges handed to religion, it's quite disgraceful that a man like Richard Lucas, who you know, believes in curing gays and equates rape with being forced to play tennis, should have this regular opportunity to vent his thoughts in the Scotsman. And him and David Robertson, who are both members of SOLAS, this extreme religious group, regularly come on to kick the furniture around and cause trouble on our Facebook group. But because we don't have censorship, we allow it. And then we've got Francis McElroy, who's an absolutely adorable, lovely guy who has absolutely, who very talented with Twitter, and he has smashed the three within a short period of time. It's got over 300 followers. He really has done an awful lot for Secular Scotland on Twitter, and I think there could very well be other people joining him to take it even further. And then you've got new boys like Elliot Bulmer, who's very much involved in the Scottish Constitution. As I said, we're still growing, and we're still looking for new talent to come on board and share this wonderful story, because secularism is going places in Scotland.
Yeah, I suppose that leads me up to one question. Have you got much support from the political lobby at all? Have any politicians come out to publicly support you, or at least even say that they sympathise, or they quietly support you, or are they much more interested in kind of placating their religious lobby?
No. The answer to that is quite frankly, no. I feel that the politicians sit in their ivory towers, and it's very much like the BBC. I am constantly sort of banging on the doors and saying, you know, you listen to us. Listen to us and listen to what we're saying, but they're not. And the politicians are very much like that. They're in their ivory tower in Edinburgh, and they're not connecting with reality. It seems that they're giving a lot of, if you look at the same-sex marriage debate, no end of times was Alex Salmond shaking the hands of the Catholic Church, inviting them in. As soon as he was elected, the doors of Bute House was opened, and it was a tea party for the religionists. But throughout the same-sex marriage debate, the Catholic Church were invited round, and not once was the Equality Network, which was behind the Equality campaign, not once were they ever invited to Holyrood. And certainly nobody's ever said, listen, we know what you guys are doing, and we see how your Facebook membership is going through the roof. We would like to talk to you. It's not happened, and it should.
But like I said, there's been no indication from any politician that they're on board with you at all.
There's only Patrick Harvey, who has spoken to the National Secular Society, which is a London-based organisation. And Terry Sanderson, the president, has come up to Holyrood and has spoken. Very interesting debate. And Patrick Harvey did attend that meeting. And I believe there was one, I can't remember her name, there was another MSP, I could find out, but she walked out halfway through. Other than that, there were no other MSPs. And that's quite disgraceful, that no other members of the Scottish Parliament are willing to engage with secularists.
Just going to say, Caroline, we're getting some bad noise from you. I don't know if Caroline can hear us at the moment. Just to let you know, Caroline, there's a lot of buzzing, and I don't know what's going on there.
Is that any better?
Yeah, that's it. We've got you back.
Okay, then it's my terribly expensive microphone, which is malfunctioning after I spilled acetone on it. I just wanted to say that we are very much a new group and a new society, and we're in our growth phase at the moment. And for politicians, it's all about numbers, and the church, after all, has a 2,000-year head start on us. And so when the politicians look at the numbers, the church is much more appealing in terms of votes. What they don't tend to realise is that there are an awful awful lot of people in Scotland who agree with us. They agree with the things that they're saying. They agree with our agenda in general. They're just not passionate enough about it because they haven't had the experiences that some of us have had that galvanised them to become passionate about it. Yeah. So when politicians don't engage with secularism, they are missing the trick. Because the things that we're saying are common sense. They're things that people are thinking across the board in Scotland. And secularism is growing, and it's growing rapidly as people start to become engaged and think, well, hang on a minute, why are people, you know, who wear dresses and don't ever get married dictating who other people should marry? Why are men deciding if women can abort? You know, they're starting to hear these arguments and get passionate about them. And it would be the very wise politicians to start to engage with that agenda now as it's gathering, rather than sticking with the old views of religion to the exclusion of all other voices.
Okay, we have a question from some guy called Mark Gordon, who none of us have heard of before, but he's asking Gary and Caroline, what are you wanting from the public regarding the current petition?
What I would really like to see from the public is I would like to hear their stories. I want to know what your experiences are of religious observance. Has it been a positive thing? Has it been a negative thing? Were you given the information by the school about what religious observance is taking place? Who's giving that religious observance? Who's involved in it? Were you asked your opinion on it? Is it non-denominational? Is it truly open to everyone, or is it Christian in nature? Do you agree with that? Have your kids have any expressed any thoughts about it? These are the kind of things that we want to know, because we want to understand the full picture of what's going on out there. So we'd very much appreciate anyone contacting us and telling us their story, and we will take those stories forward and we will show them to the Scottish Parliament and say, this is the reality, this is what's really going on in schools, and what is really going on doesn't match what says in the law, and that to me says that the law has failed.
Gary, do you have anything there? Gary?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, I can only really sort of repeat what Caroline says. I mean, she's been working very, very hard and very closely with the Invergiur parent on this. And in September, we will have an opportunity to go to the Parliament, the Scottish Parliament in Edinburgh, and we can address the committee. And if you go on to Secular Scotland and like us, befriend us, go on to the group where all the debates are had, and we'll keep you informed of that. And I think it will be in the newspapers, because they have paid, this is where we have attracted a lot of interest, and they will be very interested to know what happens to this. We're not, you know, this, a lot of people say, oh, you secularists, you're so strident, you want to get rid of religion in schools. Yes, I do. But generally, when you get secularists together, a lot more gentle. And Secular Scotland is a lot more gentle than that. We're not asking for the removal of religion. We're simply saying, ask parents first. It's not a lot to ask. And I think that that's a great first step towards having a fairer Scotland where people are properly informed about religion and what's happening to their children, because the school doors are open, and I believe you know, pastors are being invited into schools, in assemblies, evangelical extreme pastors who are preaching to children. I know that there was a hymn recently. One parent was saying how a child was having to sing a hymn, which was basically a creationist hymn, you know, saying that God was responsible for all life. Well, you know, if we want to educate kids properly, to be scientists and to compete with other students in universities, we need to go a little bit further than say that God created everything.
Okay, yeah. Okay, we're coming up for 3 minutes to go, so I'll let Caroline and Gary, you can have a little soapbox and you can advertise your group now, so you've got a few minutes on the floor just to...
Okay, well, obviously we want everybody who has an interest in religion, whether you be religious, whether you be atheist, whether you be agnostic and undecided, it doesn't really matter. If you have any sort of interest in religion and in how religion influences progressive society, then you need to come and talk to us, and you need to join us, and you need to get involved, because we are setting the agenda for how religion is going to be involved in society in the next century, in time to come. And we seek the balance, but the balance means that we need people of no faith and people of all faiths to come and talk to us and get involved. This is in your interest. So we want to be the voice to help you and to find that balance point so that we can all live together and we can make society a better place for everyone involved.
And Gary?
Yes, Cal, I want to thank you and thank Trolling with Logic, because this is the new media. As I said when I started this program, with every newspaper story that you used to read about 10 years ago, every story dealing with any moral situation, you would have to have a spokesman for the Catholic Church and the Kirk to add to the story. And mostly editors were religious. It was basically the whole of the Scottish media was pretty much a socially conservative religious setup. This is the new media: Facebook, Twitter, and things what you're doing with trolling with Logic. At last, the young people are getting a voice, and we will change Scotland to be a fairer place. And that place will mean religion will have to be, it'll be an even playing field, and religion will have to give back the privileges that it's taken over the years. But thank you very much, Cal, for giving us an opportunity to have a voice. You've done far more than the Scottish media have done.
Oh, well, that's a compliment and a half. Well, on that note, we're just going to finish out. Just a few quick announcements. As you may notice, we didn't have video tonight because we are experimenting to get the quality of the broadcast up as high as possible, because we've noticed that it's not been the best the past few weeks. So we're going to be experimenting with a lot of things. So everyone who's been watching in live, or if you're listening to this in the podcast, please send your feedback on what the quality was like today. We're really trying to tweak it and get it up there so we can give you a nice, clean, good sounding show to listen to. Apart from that, we're back next week. We have Mariam Namazi. We've managed to get her back. Hopefully she's here this time, from the Council of Ex-Muslims. If you've heard of her, she is an incredible woman. Definitely worth the listen. T, do you have anything to say?
No, not really. I have been completely useless here, but this is an issue that I'm not informed about it, and that's it really.
Oh well, there's a possibility you're coming to Scotland next year, so you might be able to see it yourself.
Yeah, but I'm not going to remember anything about
this. Yeah, we've got planned there. So yeah, thank you everyone for turning up. Thanks for all the questions. Thanks for the calls. And a very big thank you to Gary and Caroline for coming along.
Yeah, thank you, Cal. Thank you.
And we'll see you all next week.